Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, we're starting from chapter 37. And what's interesting is that there's a lot of discussion beforehand about what merit the Jewish people have and whether or not we will overcome Sancheriv and the difficulties that involved. But once Hashem decided he was going to save us, we're going to see there are just one or two psukim that are the destroying of his armies. It happens very quickly. This is a concept that we believe in, that when Hashem decides to save us, it can happen in an instant. It's an expression in Hebrew, Yeshua Hashem Keherifayin. The salvation of Hashem is like the blink of an eye. In other words, one night they went to bed and they were fearful and they were surrounded and they were besieged and everybody was depressed and they didn't see much hope. And then the next morning, the whole situation changed. The army was destroyed and the whole picture changed. That's chapter 37. V'hi kishmai ha-melech Hizkiyahu. So we have a righteous king. By the way, just because a person is righteous doesn't mean things are going to be easy. In fact, you can see he's righteous with the challenges he faces. Sancheriv was the king of the Assyria, that was the superpower of the times, and they had defeated the 10 tribes, which was a much mightier nation. Yehuda was a small tribe that where the temple was located, and the 10 tribes were mighty and had a big army, and they were defeated along with many of the powerful nations in that area. And now they had destroyed the entire land of Yehuda, all the individual cities, and the only thing was left was Yerushalayim, and it was besieged, and they had conquered big cities like that, and so there wasn't much hope. So he kishma melech Hizkiyahu, and they brought. What happened is that he sent forth a Jewish renegade, and that always makes it worse when there's a Jew on the other side, like one of our own brothers has gone over to the other side. And we mentioned that. Unfortunately, that's a pattern. When the Nazis enforced decrees against the Jews, they got capos. They got people to enforce their rules in the ghetto. When the communists wanted to take over the synagogues, they created a Jewish section of the Communist Party where Jews themselves... Now, the interesting thing was, there's a mission in Pirkei Avos that says that when people... act in a high-handed, bloody fashion, that what goes around comes around. Every single one of those Jewish communists was executed by Stalin. In other words, he used them as henchmen to go and destroy the Jewish community, and then he did away with all of them. And that was the entire section of the KGB, I think it was called the Yevseka, was the name of it. It was a division of Jews that were so loyal to the communist cause that they were willing to go against their fellow Jews. And they helped the communists destroy the Jewish community in Russia. The communists wouldn't have had any way to do it, but they used Jews who were insiders, who knew where all the rabbis were, knew where the synagogues were, knew where the yeshivas were. But that pattern that there are Jews that have gone over to the other side, in some ways it hurts. It's just that our own brethren could sell us short, could be, and that's what happened over here. And when Hizkiyahu heard, he tore his clothing. And it's important for a person not to forget the pain of the, sometimes if a person is wealthy, they don't feel the pain of the common person. People are wealthy in different ways, like sometimes people are, they have their needs met. Sometimes, in Hebrew, there's an expression that a wealthy person is called an usher. So there's an old Yiddish joke that an usher stands for einayim shinayim v'raglayim, that if your eyes work and your teeth work and your feet work, you're rich. Because you have other people that have lots of money and they can't eat, they can't see, they can't walk, they don't know, it's and then some people, people can be, their wealth is measured in different means. But if a person, if he's not affected by whatever is out there, a person should try not to be too comfortable. Meaning that if you know that someone has certain problems and you don't have those problems, it's very easy to forget the problems of others. Moshe Rabbeinu, who's our great leader, it's described that he grew up in the palace, but he went out to his brothers. And that's a way that we're supposed to think, is that we're supposed to feel other people's pain. So what happens, though, if we really don't feel the pain? Meaning it doesn't, we're fine. We're not starving. We got the money. Everything is fine in my family, and my health is fine, or whatever. So that's what it says. They cast a sack. They wore sackcloth. They put on something very itchy. When something you're wearing something very itchy, you don't forget. You're constantly reminded, why am I so uncomfortable? Oh, I'm uncomfortable because my neighbor, the poor person, he's suffering. He's in pain. He needs something. So that's a reminder. I don't know why. Today we don't seem to you don't seem to run into that, at least not that I'm aware of, that anybody puts on sackcloth or... But the concept should still be there. In other words, the concept, you had people like, things were good over here, but look at our fellow Jews in Russia, or look at our, Jews are suffering somewhere else on the globe. But today, with the media, it doesn't take much to find people that are hurting or that have needs, and so... That's that idea, though. A person should be uncomfortable. He should wear some. He should be reminded. He shouldn't forget the needs of others. Even if he personally has no reminder, he should create a reminder. It should be close to a person's heart to think about that. What should a person do? V'yavo beis Hashem. They come into the beis hamikdash. That's the place to go when a person has troubles. So, verse 2: V'yishlak esel yakam asher labayis Hashem nesov etziknei kohanim. All the leaders, this was a righteous government, and so they all felt the pain of the people. They all wore sackcloth. They all realized that Hashem was angry with them and that it was a time of introspection. So they went to the sage. In Israel, it's a little easier because they have well-known sages. Like when people have troubles, they go and they have people you can go to. And that you can wait in line, and there's people with all kinds of troubles and difficulties. They're all waiting at all hours of the day by certain people in Israel where you can go to. Here, to some extent, you have that, but I suppose we have less sages, or it's more difficult to know. But a person, when they have a problem, they should be able to share it with someone. They should be able to go to someone. They should be able to unburden themselves. So what did the king do when he has a problem? He sent a message to the prophet, Yeshayahu. And this was Yeshayahu ben Amatz. He's the author of our book, Vayomer 11. They said the following, Ko Amar Chizkiyahu. This is what Chizkiyahu said. It's interesting. There's an interesting statement in the Chazal, like that they sent too many messengers and didn't talk direct. Like he sent him a message and he sent him, oh, why didn't you go talk to each other? But in fact, the Medrash says that one of the reasons that Chizkiyahu got sick was now Yeshayahu had to come to him to see how he was feeling. So this way they would, but they didn't, sometimes a person wants to talk to someone, but he doesn't pick up the phone. Pick up the phone. Go visit that. There's this communication gap. So there is a mention of that in Chazal, that somehow there was this communication gap between Yeshayahu and Chizkiyahu. There was a reason for it, and we might get to it today. Chizkiyahu had, on his own initiative, done certain things that he felt that the prophets wouldn't be happy with. And he actually was a very unique king. He had a lot of very original rulings that he felt were necessary. And the problem is that it's good for people that are willing to try things, that are willing to be unconventional. But you have to know how unconventional you can be and still be within the proper boundaries. Chizkiyahu had seen, he was a very holy person, and he had what was called Ruach HaKodesh. When you live a block away from the temple and you feel the intense presence of Hashem, occasionally that allows you to see things that other people don't see. That's called Ruach HaKodesh, almost like a divine intuition. He saw somehow that his children would undo all the good that he did. that he would have wicked children. And on his own, he made a decision that he wouldn't get married and that he wasn't going to have kids. And the sages, they want people are supposed to get married. And so we're going to see, but he was reluctant to go visit the prophet because he was afraid he'd get yelled at. You know, if I go to him and talk to him too much, he's going to say, by the way, have you met any dates? You know, what's going on? Why aren't you getting married? You know, he was the king. He was a very eligible bachelor. So his way around it was, if I don't visit the prophet that much, then the prophet isn't going to ask me why I'm not, you know. But unfortunately, we all do that sometimes when we know that somebody might say something to us that we don't aren't comfortable hearing, so we won't visit them because they're going to ask me, you know, what's doing with XYZ. So it's not a total solution to ignore that person. It's not a healthy thing either. So, but he sent messengers, and this is what they said. Yom Sarah betochecha b'na'atza. We talked about this last week. It sounds like Nazi, but he said today is a day of pain and rebuke. Rebuke means that there were legitimate things that their society did wrong. That sometimes when you look, there are always things we can fix. We have Tisha B'Av coming tonight, and the backdrop really for the fast days are that in a certain way, whenever you have an accident, like I heard there was an Israeli plane that crashed, so they closed down the fleet until they figure out the pilots ejected to safety. There was a malfunction on one of the planes yesterday, but whenever something happens in the army, they shut down the fleet for a day, and they don't go further until they figure out what the problem is. So to some extent, when you have a fast day, you stop eating, life comes to a standstill, and you say there are things that we got to fix before we go further. And in some ways, a fast day is supposed to be that we have to be aware that everything is not perfect. We live our lives, we keep on going, but there are things that are wrong that just need to be fixed. So we put everything on hold. We're not going to eat anything else. If we don't eat, life doesn't continue. We're going to no eat, no food, no drink. We're going to stop, and we're going to see what we need to fix. So we have hints, you know, why Tisha B'Av specifically. Usually those have to do with sins between man and man, that the original Tisha B'Av came about. And so, but the real thing should be, all right, where life is going to stop for a moment, and we're going to figure out how to fix some of our problems. That's the real goal of Tisha B'Av. It's hard because we're in the South, and you need hydration, and it's just not comfortable. It's worse than not comfortable. We don't fast well. It's just not an easy. But our goal should be somehow that if we wouldn't be forced to do things differently, we would never take that pause and say, "All right, maybe there's something I could fix. Maybe there's something I need to do. Maybe there's something I'm ignoring. I'm missing." But that's what it means. A day of rebuke. It means that a rebuke means that someone can say to you, hey, this is wrong. Something needs to be done. And so he said, today is a day of trouble, but it's a day of rebuke. We have troubles. We have lots of troubles. One of the problems with the with like the Holocaust museums is that that they focus on what our enemies did. You know, the Nazis did this and they did that and they did that. But that itself is just such a small part of the picture. And then some people focused on those that fought back. But they're a very small percentage of the people that were able to fight back against, you know, that were soldiers and they were able to fight back again. But there were other people that fought back in different ways. Other people will just say, well, never again. It's very nice to say that, but unless you fix the problems that led to it, it could happen again. And so there has to be a focus on the issues. In other words, if it's a day of rebuke, or if it's a day of what is our response? Don't just look at the fact that it's a day of trouble, but what is it that we can fix? So when we hear bad news, that's supposed to be our, you know, when something is, you know, that there are Jews or there's a difficult situation in Israel or in our community or. So then our next thought should be, how can we improve? You know, what are we doing wrong? What do we need to fix? Now we don't know. We're not prophets. We don't know if Hashem is angry with us. We don't know if it's a test. But it might just be testing us to see how we'll react. And certainly we have to think of others. But There, it is a. We definitely should think about what can we fix. Maybe I'm doing something wrong. Now there are people that take it the other way. They are bad, and God's punishing me. No, we're not supposed to look at it that way. But whenever we see a problem, whenever we see a Yom Tzara, a day of trouble, of distress, so then we have to think. Maybe it's a rebuke. Maybe Hashem is angry with me because I'm not noticing something. Maybe there's something I need to fix. That's what the word tokacha means, rebuke. It means to look around and say, sometimes it pays to fix things even if they're not broken or something. But there's no question that if we look around, we'll see that there are things that we're missing that we could do better on and that we could fix. And that's the idea of a fast day. That's the idea of Chizkiyahu. He led the people, which is he went to the house of Hashem and he went to the sage. Went to the prophet. If we know a sage, if we know someone who can, we should go to them too. And he says a very interesting expression we talked about. I'm still intrigued by it, this expression that your children have come to the birthing stool, but they don't have power to give birth. It's almost like he had been told everything will work out okay, just put your faith in Hashem. And they say that he felt that we just don't have the strength. We're almost there, but we just can't get over the finish line. We're ready for something special. Like we've taken certain steps, and we've come very far. But just like a person carries a child for 9 months, and that's huge. That takes forever, and they feel like that baby's never going to come out, and they're all the way when it comes to labor, but then they just don't have the strength to make it the final step. So that's the expression he uses. He said the children have come. They're ready for. They're ready to be saved. They're ready to defeat our enemies. They're ready to do teshuva, but they have a challenge finding the strength. One of our most common prayers is asking Hashem for strength. Give us the koyach to do yashik koyach or chazak v'yamat, strengthen us. Give us that. Sometimes we have an idea what we need to do, but we just can't find the strength. So that's the prayer. Verse 4. Ula yishma Hashem lokachas dibir v'ashokam. Now there is another strategy over here. It could be this strategy is from humility, and you never go wrong with humility. And that is, we look at it, and we know Chizkiyahu is the one that instituted universal education. He had yeshivas put up everywhere, and the Gemara says that he put up a sword in front of the study hall, and he made it mandatory that everybody should study. And it says that even the little children from knew all the laws of purity and all the and to this day the sociologists are trying to figure out why Jews are so they study and they get education. Education is so important, and they, if only they could convince other groups that education is important. Like, what is it about? But it's in our blood. It goes back to Chizkiyahu that. We need to learn, we need to study, and it's not a choice, it's not optional, it's not just something nice. Learning is our life, and so that was, as a righteous king, he had made that studying very important. He put the sword in front of the study hall. I don't know if it was a sign, or he actually had guards saying, everybody, all right, go to class. But I bet we'd have a better attendance if we had, somebody with a sword, Yeah, that's, get to class, right? So, out of his humility, he wasn't willing to say that, we've done good things. That's typically, even though many times we do good things, but we never know if we've done enough. And so we always have a humble prayer like, Hashem, give us strength to do more, or help us discover what else we can do. And his prayer over here is, he doesn't pray that we've deserved it. He's not sure if we've deserved it. But he feels over here, he wants to, that there's the issue of sanctifying Hashem's name. And you do find this in a lot of our prayers, the idea that we live in a world of darkness, and there are people that legitimately look for light. They look for Hashem's name, and people get confused. They don't understand why things happen, and they decide that it doesn't matter, and they don't always, and it comes from lack of seeing Hashem. In those days, they had idol worshippers, and that was like, people would go to the idol. That meant they were doing human sacrifices and adultery, and every sin mixed in together was involved in idolatry. And so people, clearly, those people didn't see Hashem. And so, but in our times also, we live in a very immoral world where a lot of evil goes on. Just look at the newspaper, and you know, I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but there are just places in the world where there are a lot of people harm each other. That's basically what it is. It just astounds me. I don't know why it should. You know, it's in Africa, it's in an Arab country. You know, but basically, people are just butchering each other, and it's not just soldiers against soldiers. If that's okay, but they're butchering innocent people. Just taking advantage of people, looting, killing. It's every day in different parts of the world. And so we want people to see that it's not right. It's evil. It's wrong. People shouldn't be doing this. We want the world, the Hashem's name, to be sanctified. We want the people that stand for the right things, the message go out, the light should come to the world. He says over here, maybe I don't know whether we deserve to be saved, but maybe Hashem will save us for the sake of His name when He hears the words of Rav Shaka. Rav Shaka, as we mentioned, had said, well, none of the other idols had the power to save their nations, so why should Hashem be any different? In other words, that Judaism is no different than any of the other religions. And just like those other religions, those idols were powerless, your ideas also are powerless. And so here he's saying that Hashem should hear that cursing and that blasphemy, and He should sanctify His name. He should teach the world that it's not like those dead idols, meaning the idols that were just made by people, that were statues, that were had no power. People should realize that there is a great power of Hashem. So he said, maybe, I don't know whether we're worth it or not, but for the sake of your name, Hashem, bring redemption, save us. And you'll see that a lot in our prayers, that prayer is an idea that we want the world to know the truth. We want the savages that are out there not to be able to continue to exist like that. We want people to realize that goodness is proper, that it is. They call you a sucker if you help people. You know, you're wasting your time. What do you know? Even when you do mitzvah, sometimes people, you know, they, oh, you're doing that. I did that. You know, but not anymore. I wasted too much time on. You know, no. That's a people need to see that there's value to it and that it's worthwhile and that it'll be rewarded. So he says maybe Hashem will hear these words of Rav Shaka, who cursed, and that's why he uses the word living God. They called their religions God, but the gods that they worshipped don't exist. They were just a statue. You can go now and see those broken statues, and it's a dead god. It's not a. But compared to that, our God is alive. He's a living God. Hashem should hear those words. A lot of the people had killed. He davens for the sheris, the remnant. You'll hear that name in a lot of synagogues that were made by Holocaust survivors. They call themselves the Sheris Israel, the Sheris Aplata, the remnant. That's where that name comes from. The word Sheris means from those that were left, because a lot of people didn't make it. You know, a lot of people died in Europe. They died in the pogroms. This is the Sheris, the remnant. Most of the country had been overrun, but at least the Sheris, those that have survived, the remnant that's here, maybe they'll be saved. That's this word here on the verse 4. But Yavlav de Melchus Giyo Yeshayos, and the servants came. But Yomalei Mishael called somewhere else, Yeshayos said, give this message to your master. So again, you see, Yeshayahu doesn't go to Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu doesn't come to Yeshayahu. It's somehow they stayed away from each other.
Several months ago, we came upon a place where one of the kings had Yeshayahu killed. Time-wise, are we now near the end of...
No, we're back. It's Yeshayahu's grandson who kills his grandfather. And that's by Menasha. We keep on back and forth. In other words, we're with this is Chizkiyahu and Yeshayahu are going to marry their children, and then Chizkiyahu's son is going to be Menasha, and he's going to kill his grandfather. That's what happens later. So, Ka'omar, tell your master Hashem, Al Tira Mignayadwar Mashur Shemati, Asher Gafa. Don't be afraid of. Now, he says that they called him the officer of the king. He said they're Nar. Nar means they're a lad. That's just child's talk. Don't pay any attention to that. You hear a lot of that in war. You know, they're going to do this, they're going to do that, they're going to bomb Tel Aviv, they're going to wipe you out. That's just kids talking. Melech Hashirosi, don't worry about that. Verse 7, you know, Simbarul Vashama. So first he said there'll be a reprieve. The king's going to hear something, Vashav al Arto, Vipalti Vacher of Arto, and there'll be a reprieve, and the king himself will go back to his land and he'll die over there. And I mentioned to you, the archaeologists have found this evidence of this, that he was killed in his land by the sword. But Yeshev Rav Shaka and Rav Shaka went back. And all of a sudden, the king, there was a threat from an African country that came up against them. Kishama Kinatsa Malakish. This was the superpower that was attacking us. Their army was threatened from behind by an African country. The Yishma al Tirhaka, they heard about a country called, a king called Tirhaka. I'm in verse 9, Melakush, the king of Kush, Lamor. Yatze Elochimitach. Today, the Kushim, the black people, they call the Kushim. Kush is a country in Africa. And typically, the people in Africa are darker than the people in the in Asia. And so they were, today in Israel, they call the blacks the Kushim. It's just an expression. So the king of Kush came, Lamor, he's fighting against Assyria. Yishma Visha Melochim Elchiskel Lamor. So now the king of Assyria, you might have thought that he could take this as a sign that maybe he shouldn't try to destroy Yerushalayim. He does the opposite. He says, don't worry, I'll be back. That's what he says. Verse 10. Go tell Chizkiyo, Melech Yehuda, Lamor. Ayisa Elokecha. Don't let your God convince you that he saved you. Lamor lo tinosh Yerushalayim b'yad Melech Asher. Don't think this is going to stop me. Verse 11. Hinei atah shamata asher osu Melech Asher. And he blasphemes again. He says, you should know what happened to the kings of Ashur Kolartus, the king of Ard Lachrimam. He wiped them all out. And Ba'ata Tanakla, you think you're going to be saved? Verse 12. Hasil Osem Elohe Agoyim Asher Shkisa Avosat. Do you think that their gods saved them? Or the Gozen and Chorath, the Retziv, Mnei Adna, Asher Patalashim. And again, the archaeologists have located these gods. They have them, the different statues. You can go and study the idols of the ancients. They have these statues that you can see them in the picture books. Verse 13, where's Melech Hamas? Umelech Arpad, Umelech Lawyer, Sepharim, Haina, where are all these kingdoms? So, verse 14, Yikas Sepharim, Beata Melech, and he took these notes, the blasphemy, the Yikra, and he called out, the Yal Beis Hashem, and he went to the house of Hashem. So again, he goes to Shul. You know, prayer you can never get enough of. And he spreads them out in front of Hashem. Verse 15, Mispalo Kiskel Hashem. And he davened to Hashem, saying, Hashem, Svakos Hashem, you are the one king of the legions. In other words, these mighty armies of the thousands that are encamped around us, you control greater armies. You are the Hashem Svakos, the Hashem of all the multitudes. The God of Israel, Yoshev HaKruvim, you're up high. I think we mentioned last week, Kruvim, the cherubs, stand for like the children, in the merit of the study of the children. That's one of the, we always put great value to supporting the schools and the children, the pure study of Torah for the future. Atu Hashem Elokim, you are the only one. These other gods, they're not gods. You are the only God, the only king. Atu Asisa Sheshemai, you made the heavens and the earth. Verse 17, Hatei Hashem Esaznaka, bend your ear, Ushma, Pika Hashem Einech, and see what's going on. Hashem is Kodivir Sancher, Vesher Shlach Horv Elohim Chai, and see the words that he said to blaspheme the living God. Now, verse 18, Umnum Hashem Hekrivu Malchei Asher, and I know that until now you've allowed this Assyrian king to destroy all the lands. Es Kol Artos, Ves Artum. And he's destroyed many countries until now. Verse 19, and Hashem used the king of Asher to punish these other nations and destroy their gods. But that was Kilo Elohim Hema, because those gods were not real gods. Ki Masi De Adam, those were man-made gods. Eitz V'Aven, made out of sticks and stones. The Abdomen, and the king of Assyria destroyed them. But this is different. V'yata Hashem Elokein Hoshienu Biyadu, save us. V'yadu kol mamlachas oretz, and let all the kingdoms of the world know. Ki'ata Hashem levadacha, you are the only God, you are the only Hashem. This was the prayer that he said. Again, we find these types of words in many of our prayers. Vishat Yishayo ben Amato Chesile Mekol Amar Hashem Elokei Yisrael. So it's very interesting. Chizkiyahu davens, and he's still worried. He's still wearing sackcloth. He still has this big burden upon himself that this big superpower is going to wipe them out. And the prophet hears that the prayer was accepted. In other words, because he has a channel up there, and so he hears that he must have been davening good. So he says, Chizkiyahu says, Kol Amar Hashem Asher Yispalalti, hey, you daven to me about Sancheirev, verse 22, Zeh Adavar Asher Diber Hashem Olav. I have a prophecy. And this is where we were in the middle of last time. These are poetic words, just describing the whole scene of what had transpired. And it's a message that should be delivered to these nations of the world, specifically to Sancheirev, the king of Asher, that felt that the Jewish people were like all the other peoples, and that our God was like all the other gods. And so the message to him is he says the following. The Jewish people, the daughter of Zion, the pure maiden of Israel. And Israel is always talked about as a maiden, like a young maiden is like a very innocent, sweet. You know, that's the description of the land of Israel. Achrecha rosh haniyah bas Yerushalayim, and you've specifically attacked Yerushalayim. They wave their heads at you. They mock you. The words that you say, that you feel that you're more powerful than Hashem, they mock you. Esmicha rafta, who do you think you've blasphemed? Who do you think you... It's one thing when you feel that Hashem sent you to punish the other nations, but in the words of the Medrash, he felt he was a god. A lot of the ancient emperors felt that they were gods. And so, who do you think you are? Who do you think you've lifted up your voice against? To the Holy One of Israel. Verse 24. Biyad avidecha, and you've either done it directly or you've sent messengers that have blasphemed. The Talmud, Barov Rikfi Ani Elisa, and you've said that with all your chariots, you're more powerful than these gods. You're going to come up high, Levanona, you're going to cut down the cedars of Lebanon, you're going to cut down the temple, the place where people get white. Levanon means where they purify themselves. You've said you're going to cut all that down. You've said you're going to destroy Yerushalayim. And you're gonna chop down the trees. The Jewish people always compared to cedar trees, like big trees. It's very common in our literature to talk about the righteous or the people being like a tree. That definitely is part of the. You'll see that in Tehillim, like tzaddikim are called an erez, like a cedar tree, like a big, with roots, and we're deep rooted, and we provide shade, and there is what to discuss about the idea of trees. Like it's definitely used as a metaphor commonly, and so he's described here as trying to cut down the forest. You know, he's trying to wipe the Jewish people out, and that's the cutting down the trees. Mifka Barosh of Alba Morim Kito Yar Kamol. He's going to come in into the forest and try to cut them down. One of the things he did was he said he was going to cut off the water supply. And he said that if all of his chariots would dip their feet in the water, it would dry it up. Now, he made fun of the vast army that he brought. He said, Nikarisi, he's going to dig and he's going to drink the water. And, Va'akri, Ba'kaf, Tamet, Kol Yar Mitzvah, we're going to dry up all the land. That's what he had said. That was part of, he was trying to, take away the water supply in the Middle East, you know, of Yerushalayim. So that was what he thought. That was part of his strategy, was he was going to take away all the water. Verse 26. So you think that you can be more powerful than the nation of Israel? Halo shemate emrochok. You didn't study history. You should have heard from long ago that there have been many people that have tried to come against us. Osa sisi mimei kedem v'yitzartela. And you're not the first one who's tried to make war. And Bati Lahashis Galim Nitim Orim Bitsuros, and has tried to make desolate the land of Israel. 27. The Yoshvein Kitzer Yad. You were going to destroy the residents of the land of Israel. You were going to cut them off and besiege them and destroy the land. Uvoshu Hal Asif Sada Vyirak Desha Chatzir Ghana Stambul Kedman. Just like a wind sometimes picks up a crop and destroys it. You were going to be like this wind that would attack, like the monsoon, or not the monsoon, what do they call it? They have these very heavy winds that come in the Middle East. The chamsun, I think, is what they call it. Like a sandstorm comes, And it, like, you can have a field with grass and flowers, and it'll come and like pick it all up. That's what he described itself. V'shivtecha v'seisecha, your goings, your comings, yadati, Hashem knows, you know, you think you're going to do some kind of sneak attack, and you think you can come with this army, and Hashem won't know. And he knows the anger, you've angered Hashem. Yan, here, guess at 29, Eli, because you have angered Hashem. Now, v'shenana olav, and you've campaigned against him, and the words have come to my ear, v'samte chai ba'pecha, you know what Hashem is going to do? He's going to pick you up like with a hook with your mouth. In other words, you're going to be led away, and it won't even be your choice. You know, he's going to be forced to leave and to run back. It describes it in a strong way, like putting your ring in his nose. You don't usually do that with a person, you know, put a ring in the nose. It's like you do with it, just like when a person captures a fish or something, they hold it up by the ring in the nose, or they put a bit in its mouth. You think that you're a god? You're no more than a helpless animal that's going to be lifted up and forced to go. You think you're going to come and trample on the forest. You're going to trample on our flower bed. You're going to destroy the land of Israel. No, you're going to be picked up and you're going to be sent home. And what you're going to see what's going to happen when you get home. Umasi b'sesecha, and you'll have the bit of Hashem in your lips. He had said that he wasn't going to leave the campaign until he destroyed the land of Israel. And he was not going to quit. And Hashem said, you're going to go back whether you like it or not. And you're going to go back on the way that you have come. Verse 30, this will be the sign. And so he gives them a sign that he should know that this came from Hashem. But, you know, some people, there were armies in those days that were close quarters. And they didn't understand the spread of germs. And there were times that they armies were defeated by plagues and by famine. And so he didn't want Sanherib to not get the message. He should know that this was going to happen. So he was warned. He said, you'll have a sign. Ochel shana, you'll eat. There'll be things that will grow. V'shana shenis, and then the next year, there'll be stumps. V'shana shlishi zar v'kitzu v'notu karami v'ochel piryam. This was some kind of like farming sign that they would see. That to the land of Israel, that even though the land had been destroyed, that stuff would grow from nothing, and then they would try to reap and try to regrow, and the land would replenish. Verse 31, and so this was a sign that even though Sennacherib had tried to starve us out, had gotten rid of the water, had destroyed the crops, he wouldn't succeed in destroying the land of Israel. But Yashva Plaitas Beis Yehuda Hanisheris, the remnant from Yehuda is going to, even though you don't see it on top, they have roots underneath, Shorish Lamata. And the roots underneath are going to regrow. And that's one of the miracles, really, is that the Jewish people has been destroyed, you know, in many generations they've been wiped out and destroyed, and they regrow, they regenerate, the communities they have roots underneath. Where is that going to come from? Verse 32, Kim Yushalayim, because Yushalayim will be the remnant. Uplaytim Harsiyam. They say the Chafetz Chaim, who was the elder sage of the Jewish people in the 30s in Europe, he died, right? The Nazis had already come to power and were threatening to destroy Poland, and Hitler had said that he's going to wipe out the Jews, and the Jews were afraid, rightfully so. They saw it coming. I mean, they had no place to go, basically. But the Jews in Europe were very frightened, and they didn't know what was going to be. And they went to the Chafetz Chaim, who was in his late 90s at that point, and was very feeble. People, the right word, I'm not able to get around and very old, and they said to him, what's going to be with the Jewish people? The Jews weren't welcome in Europe, and the communists had destroyed the Jews in Russia, and Hitler was threatening to destroy the Jews in Poland. What's going to be? So he quoted this verse in Yeshayahu that the Jewish people will have a remnant in the land of Israel. In other words, the Jews, and until then, nobody really thought of the land of Israel as being a main. Today, in our time, it's already the most Jews anywhere in the world today are in the land of Israel. But at that point, the majority of Jews were in Europe, Israel was a small, tiny country with a few amount of Jews, and he said that there'll be a remnant will survive in the land of Israel. And after the war, that's where the Holocaust survivors wanted to go, even though Israel was not an easy country to go to at that time because there was no infrastructure, and the Holocaust survivors, they wanted to go to Israel because they understood that that would be a place to rebuild. But that's what Hakim Yerushalayim, Teitei Yerushalayim, Pleita, Mahar Tzion from Mount Zion, Kenneth Hashem, Svokotha, and it's because of Hashem's zeal and anger at your coming against him, he's going to wipe out this army. 33, you're not going to touch this city. You won't even shoot an arrow in. They won't even need to put up a shield. They were going to destroy the crops and they were going to use up the water. And then if they had to, they would put up a mound where they would build up the ground so they could come over the wall. That's called a sola. On Tisha B'Av, when they talk about what they did to the city, they did these types of methods of overcoming these walls. So he's saying to Sanherib, you think you're going to wage all these types of war, it's not going to happen. B'derech asher ba yashuv. On the same road that you came, you're going to go back. You're not coming into this city. Neum Hashem. That was the city. Why did Hashem do this? 35. Hashem says, I'm going to protect this city. The city doesn't have anything to worry about. Lamani, for my sake. Uleman David Avdi, because for sake of David my servant. This is the great merit of David HaMelech. Verse 36. This was on Pesach night, by the way. An angel of Hashem came out. The Yaakov and Machana Usher, and he wiped out in the camp of Assyria 185,000 soldiers. Veshkima Babokir, and they woke up in the morning, a few people here and there, Vinei Kulam Begori Mason. And the army was gone. It was just a bunch of dead. Nobody woke up. We say a prayer, Moda Ani, like in the morning, that, you know, we wake up in the morning because there are people who go to bed and they don't wake up the next day. And so this entire army went to bed and they didn't wake up. And sure enough, he had to take the same road that he came. He had to go back. And he went back to the city of Nineveh. Nineveh is the famous city where Jonah had gone to Nineveh to try to get the people to change. And Assyria was the ancient enemy of the Jewish people, and that was what Jonah foresaw, that they would try to destroy the Jewish people, the city of Nineveh.
Jonah came before this.
Before that, yeah, that's right. By he who mishtafa beis nisrek elokav, and I guess he didn't learn his lesson because he's still going to the idol. So he went to the idol. The tradition has it that there was a discussion over here that he couldn't get over what had happened to him, that he was defeated by the God of Israel. And so he asked his advisors, what makes the Jews so powerful? What makes their God so powerful? And he told them the story of the binding of Isaac. You know, the Muslims, they all know that story. You know, that's well known, that, you know, they was willing to give up his child for the sake of their God. So that's why their God wouldn't let you. He said, well, I would give both my sons up. The only thing is, his sons were listening. And they assassinated him. That's the story over here. But over here, it just mentions that when he went to bow down, so his two sons, Adar Melech and Sharetzer, they killed their own father. And they ran to Ararat, that's in Turkey. And then another king took over, and that was the end of Sanherib. So hopefully all the enemies of the Jewish people should have such an end, and maybe hopefully this year will be our last Tisha B'Av.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.